In this chapter, as we saw last week, Jacob blesses each one of his sons in turn and forecasts something of their future as the tribes of Israel. And we have read Jacob's blessing upon his special son, Joseph. And we looked at verses 23 and 24 last week, where not only does Jacob look forward to Joseph's future, but he also glances back at his experiences at the hands of those who persecuted him, the archers, but how that he met their attacks when his bow abode in strength, and so on. Well, now verses 25 and 26 complete this blessing, and I thought I would look at this evening. And you'll see that in these two verses the words bless and blessing occur repeatedly. It's as if they gather force, and everything that God can give seem promised to be lavished upon the head of Joseph. Of course, these things here are to be taken literally in the first place. Let's just look at them. In verse 25, the blessings of heaven above. It refers to the coming of the annual rains upon the land of Canaan, the early rain and the latter rain, because without the rains you wouldn't have the harvest, and without the harvest, of course, would be drought and starvation and death. And this, of course, refers to when Ephraim and Manasseh, the tribes of Joseph, will be in Canaan, and the blessings of heaven above, the annual rains, would be such a blessing upon the land. The blessings of the deep that lieth under, referring to underground rivers and streams, down to which you can tap wells of water, and with which you can use that water to irrigate the land. And then the blessings of the breasts and of the womb, meaning the blessing of children born safely and nourished comfortably with mother's milk, and maybe flocks and herds born and suckled as well. So these are temporal blessings, aren't they, for the land of Canaan? Rains from above, wells of water from beneath, and descendants and more flocks and herds. What else could you want in an earthly sense in that land flowing with milk and honey? And he rounds it off in verse 26 by saying that Jacob himself actually had more blessings than his forebears Abraham and Isaac. The blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors. It's interesting, isn't it, that he should say that. I've been more blessed than my grandfather Abraham or my father Isaac. And these blessings are going to come upon you, Joseph. Do you remember what Jacob said when he was standing before Pharaoh a while before this, and Pharaoh asked him how old he was? Genesis 47 verse 9. And Jacob said, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the life of my fathers in their pilgrimage. A rather mournful and sad thing. He hadn't lived as old, to be as old as Abraham or Isaac. But here he says that the number of blessings he's had have outnumbered and been more than the blessings of Abraham and Isaac. And you see, you might have a shorter life, but you can have more blessings than those who live longer in this world. A shorter life can have more blessings than a life that's lived longer And so Jacob gives testimony to this. And he says, these blessings have been so extensive to the utmost bound of the hills. They've gone so far. They've been so widespread and all covering. And they've been enduring to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They've lasted for so long. And he says, these shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. And the after history of the Old Testament shows that the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh were particularly blessed tribes in Canaan in these very respects. But of course, we see in these things spiritual equivalents. And we use this language as a picture to illustrate for us the spiritual blessings that are laid up for us who are the spiritual descendants of Jacob. And I want us to see that picture in these words this evening. And we're going to look first of all at God's blessings from above and from beneath, and God's blessings beyond. Let's look first of all at above, verse 25. Blessings of heaven above. The rains, of course, that fell on the land of Canaan. But in Scripture, rainfall is a picture of the blessings of God that come upon his people. And we're reminded, you see, of their source, aren't we? Blessings of heaven above. All our spiritual blessings come from heaven. James 1 verse 17, you remember we were in that verse some weeks ago. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father. That's the language. And it teaches us where to look, dear friends, for what we need. And it teaches us to be careful that we don't look too much at means and second causes. Because it's blessings of heaven above that we want, and they alone can really meet our need. I was reminded of this only today as we were talking to a friend on the telephone. And she was telling Margaret actually, she said, every time I take my daily tablets, I pray over them as I take them and ask that the Lord might make them effectual to me. We pray for our doctors in the practice because God has given them to us for our benefit. And that struck me rather forcibly. I must admit, I don't think I pray over my paracetamol that I take to relieve my headache. I don't know that I've ever prayed for our doctors. Now what is that? Is that being so super spiritual and pietistic? Or is it recognizing with a healthy degree of spiritual realism that we shall only be really blessed if God sends down blessing? And although medication and doctors and other means and instruments are there to be used, and we don't despise them, but in a subtle kind of way we're in danger perhaps of looking to them rather than to the one who has given them to us and who is pleased to use them for our good. And so if we don't pray over the use of these things, we may well be getting into a habit of looking too much to second causes. Dear friends, these are blessings from heaven above. It's a timely word for us, I think. Because after all, nothing will ever do us any good, really, unless the blessing of God is on it. Things are only to us what God makes them to us. They can't be a blessing to us of themselves. And just a simple thing as daily medication surely comes into that category if we are in all our ways to acknowledge him, as the scripture says. Well, that's a word for me this evening. I don't know about anyone else. I'll take it to heart. But blessings also, if they're illustrated by rainfall that comes from above, means that God gives prepared blessings. You see, the rain has a preparation period, doesn't it, before it falls? Psalm 147, verse 8, "Who prepareth rain for the earth?" Now, we know that rain comes when water vapour in the atmosphere changes into water droplets. In other words, it condenses, doesn't it? And billions of these water droplets cluster together to form clouds, the rain clouds that we see, and these eventually collapse under their own weight and they empty upon the earth as rain, don't they? But there's a preparation period, the evaporation of the waters from the earth going up, condensing, forming into clouds and falling back down again as rain. And you see, dear friends, God prepares blessing for us. In that psalm we sang earlier, Psalm 68 verse 10, it says, "Thou hast prepared of thy blessing for the poor." And you may have to wait for God's blessings, because rain doesn't come from nothing. And God's blessings take a time to be prepared, and they are given at the right time. Apparently, in the annual cycle of the seasons in Israel, there were, as I said, the early rain and the latter rain, and both were vital for a successful harvest. They came in their seasons. And dear friends, you might be praying tonight for a particular thing, and you might say, "Oh God, give me this blessing. I need this particular blessing." Well, it'll come in due season. God may take time to form and prepare and time the thing exactly right, and it may not be in our time, but if it's in His time, it can't be bad, can it? Blessings of heaven above, like the rain. And sometimes this whole question of what is blessing is misunderstood by us, isn't it? It's interesting that in Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 3 we find this interesting verse. It might seem a strange word. Ecclesiastes 11 verse 3, "If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth." Well, yes, that's right. That's what happens in rainfall. But you see, the spiritual meaning is this: that God's dealings with us can sometimes not look like blessings from above at all. They're like dark clouds gathering thick and black and gloomy, threatening, menacing, angry looking, not very pleasant at all. And they present a kind of day that you feel you're better off at home and close the front door and get in front of the fire. You want to avoid a day like that. That's how God's blessings can sometimes look. But you see, if the clouds be full of rain, then they empty themselves upon the earth. And the very thing that looks so dark and angry and threatening and horrible, it's like that because it's going to break upon us in blessing. And that's how God deals with us providentially, isn't it? The very thing that seems the worst for us is the thing that ends up being the best for us. It was like that for Jacob, wasn't it? He said at one point, "Joseph is not, Simeon is not, you will take Benjamin away, all these things are against me." He was living under a dark cloud. Ah, but if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And a little time later he saw just how all these things were for him, not against him. And of course the whole life of Joseph is this very thing, isn't it? When things are at their darkest, gloomiest, heaviest, most angry looking, most threatening, shortly afterwards it turns into blessing. Dear friends, don't give up when the clouds are over you, storm clouds. awful, depressing. God is there. They're his clouds. And they're going to be his blessings. We know the hymn, don't we? Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds ye so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessing on your head. Well, you see, these are blessings of heaven above. You can afford to live under a cloud for a while, can't you? If that very thing is going to pour blessing upon you from above. This is the lesson, you see, and it's necessary for us to remember this. We don't always recognize what blessing is. It looks to us far unlike blessing. Very, very unlike it. Very unlike it. Far from it. But it can be blessing in potential, which is coming. So, above. Look above. All that we need comes from him. The Lord's busy preparing it and working things out for us. And even when it least looks like it, there is the blessing waiting to fall in its appointed time. Let's look secondly at beneath. It goes on in verse 25, blessings of the deep that lieth under. Now it means, as I've said, things that are stored underground, and God has stored rivers, streams, springs of water under the earth. And they're blessings that have got to be tapped. They're out of sight. You've got to sink things down to get at them, but they're there to be appropriated. The wells in Canaan, the fountains of water that overflowed, broke forth through the surface of the ground and gave such refreshment to the earth. What does this stand for? Well, whereas the blessings of heaven above encourage us to look to God for the blessing we need to come down, there is also this aspect to it, that there are secret purposes of God that we do not see, but we've got to trust in, and that we shall draw blessing out of these secret purposes of God. You see, buried deep in God's purposes, hidden away, the Lord stores up things for us. In Isaiah 28 verse 29 we read that he is wonderful in counsel and excellent in working. Now there are two things there, you see. Wonderful in counsel, what God has thought up and designed, what God has planned and purposed before the world began in eternity past in the everlasting covenant. But he's excellent in working when he's actually working it all out in his providence for us. But the wonderful in counsel bit is referring to the blessings of the deep that lieth under, and you don't see them yet, but you must trust him for them. Let me illustrate what I mean. There was a missionary once who had a monthly paycheck sent to her. And of course this monthly paycheck was very important. You can't live without the means under God's blessing. And month by month this check arrived. But one day she was seriously ill and no paycheck came. And it was especially hard to cope with. Have they forgotten me at home? No paycheck. And I'm so poorly and weak. I feel so unwell. I need the paycheck, especially now, for extra food to be bought for me, to strengthen me in my weakness. It was so bad, her illness and no money, that she had to live on oatmeal and canned milk. And 30 days went these by until finally the paycheck arrived. By then she was recovered of her illness. But for those 30 days, what's the Lord doing? Has the Lord forgotten me? It seems as if the people back home in my home church have forgotten me. Has the Lord forgotten me? Why has he left me here, languishing, feeling so unwell, struggling to survive on miserable oatmeal and canned milk? Don't the people think about me back home or pray for me? Has the Lord abandoned me? And the devil comes in, you see, and makes the woman think hard thoughts of God and hard thoughts of the Lord's people. You can imagine it, can't you? A real struggle, a real battle going on. Well, she goes home on furlough, and she told the doctor about her intestinal digestive trouble. And when the doctor heard her description of her disease, he said this: if your check had arrived on time and you had been eating your current diet, you would now be dead, because the best treatment for the illness you had was a 30-day oatmeal diet. You see, God knows what he's doing, doesn't he? And there are blessings of the deep that lieth under. There are secret, hidden purposes of God that underlie what God is doing outwardly with you. And you don't know what's under there. And you don't know what God in his secret purposes is unfolding for you. And you see, you must not read the situation from how it looks now, but believe that there's more to it. There's another dimension to all this. He's wonderful in counsel and excellent in working. As the same hymn I've quoted puts it, deep in unfathomable minds of never failing skill, he treasures up his bright designs and works his sovereign will. See, they're deep mines underground, or blessings of the deep that lieth under. And dear friends, we are exercised in our hearts, aren't we, over this? Our faith is stretched and strengthened and drawn out with this, as we've got to battle through and believe that God is working his purposes out. And it's no good us demanding that we dig down and see what's stored up for us. Let God have his secrets. The secret things belong unto the Lord our God. The things that are revealed belong to us and to our children, that we might do them. We must believe in these blessings of the deep that lieth under. And even like Job, if he seems to slay us, yet we will trust him. And in the case of Job, you see, what blessings of the deep that lieth under were there for him, all out of sight. Job didn't know, did he, about that accusation of Satan against him concerning the Lord? Job didn't know that the Lord had given Satan permission to touch him in these various ways. Job didn't know that it was all about the vindication of God and the vindication of his servant Job, this thing that was going on. All Job knew were the troubles coming thick and fast. But when he said, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him, he was giving expression to this: I believe there are blessings of the deep that lieth under the secret, all-wise, perfect will of God, will of there, that is being worked out by him. And I will believe in that and wait for God to have his way. The blessings of the deep that lieth under. There are deep things, dear friends, going on in the lives of the Lord's people. Very deep things indeed. Things that we don't see, but they're all very clear and present to the mind of God. He knows what he's doing. He knows the way we take. He knows the thoughts he thinks towards us, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give us an expected end. He's doing all things well. Blessings of the deep that lieth under. And he will work these things out for us. So whether we look above at where all these things come from, or whether we think of beneath the great blessings stored up for us there that will be ours when we see the purpose of it all, They are blessings just the same. Well, we look at one more direction, and we look beyond as well, because here we see blessings of the breasts and of the womb, and of course it's birth and feeding and nourishment. And this speaks of fruitfulness. And this is a very wonderful blessing too, dear friends, because you see, as a result of our lives, blessed by God, souls can be born to God by means of our witness. The blessings of the womb, from the womb of our witness, if I may put it like that, souls can be born of God. Who knows the effect of our lives? Who knows what effect our lives are having? I heard an interesting little account recently, which is very true. Some years back in London, in one of the teaching hospitals, there was a black medical student from Ghana, and he was training amongst a group of very ungodly medical students. And these other students gave this Ghanaian Christian a very, very hard time indeed. They did their level best to ridicule him, play pranks on him, humiliating him, persecuting him with all they could. And the thing is that God gave him such grace that hard though it is, though it was for him, he always came up smiling with his great big wide smile and all his beautiful white teeth. Always came up smiling, a radiant believer. It went on for 18 months. And eventually the ringleader happened to see this Ghanaian Christian in the lounge of this hospital, and he said, "Tell me," he said, "what is it about you that means that you're prepared to take all this that we've been throwing at you this year and a half, and far from it depressing you and breaking you, it all you do is come up smiling. What is it that makes you like this and enables you to behave in this manner?" And so the Ghanaian medical student said, well, and he gave his testimony, how the Lord Jesus saved him from his sins, gave him a new heart. Now he's a Christian, follower of Jesus, follower of others, got the power of the Lord in his life, and a joy, and strength for every need. And he commended the gospel to this student. And the Ghanaian Christian said, "I'll tell you what," he said, "if you meet me in this same lounge this coming Sunday at 5:50, I'll take you to the church where I attend, and you can hear more about these things." And this ungodly ringleader of the persecutors said, "Well, I might just, I don't know." And you can imagine the Ghanaian going up to his room and praying every day between then and Sunday that this man would be there. 5:50 in the lounge, Sunday evening, and lo and behold, he was there. They went to Westminster Chapel. They heard Dr. Lloyd-Jones. It's a very powerful sermon. And the ungodly medical student was quite taken with it and quite solemnized. Came back the next week, very solemnized. Came back a third week, and eventually joined the queue that was lined up to in turn see the doctor in his vestry at the end of the evening service, like wounded birds going for help. And he was converted. And not so long ago, a minister friend of mine met this converted medical student who is now a professor of some branch of medicine in a university up north. And my minister friend said, "Tell me," he said, "is this true about this Ghanaian Christian?" And this man said, with tears in his eyes, tears rolling down his cheeks, even after all this time, he said he took it all that we threw at him, and he came up smiling, And there was something so special and different about this man. And it made me want to go to church to listen to what he was listening to and find out more. And I thank God for the presence of that young man there. It led to my conversion. Now you see, that's the blessing of the womb, isn't it? Someone born of God out of the womb of that young man's witness. And who knows, I say, what effect even our unspoken Christian life is having as it's lived out in front of others who perhaps have never heard the gospel but have got eyes to see, haven't they? And they can see our lives, got ears to hear our speech, so radically different from the speech of those around. And maybe one day, as God gives us opportunity, may listen to our words of witness, weak and faltering though they may be. But it's the Lord who does it, isn't it? Blessings of heaven above, the Lord can use our feeble, weak witness. We don't trust in our witness, we trust in the Lord, don't we? To use our witness. And he can do this. Souls born of God. Our lives, dear friends, are characterized by blessings, aren't they? And those blessings make us so different, markedly different. We probably forget, really, what a contrast we make with people in the world. We're together so much of the time as Christians, and we are used to one another, aren't we? And we only need to be in the world for a little while before we're brought up short to realise what a difference there is. Even in little things, isn't it? Even in attitudes and outlook and things, so different. It's like a little candle with a little flame, but if it's burning in deep, deep darkness, it's a very bright, singular light, isn't it, that's showing. Well, the Lord can use that. Blessings of the womb and of the breasts. And we know, dear friends, what newborn Christians feed on, don't we? 1 Peter 2 and verse 2. As newborn babes, earnestly desire the sincere milk of the word, that ye may grow thereby. Can there be a greater delight than to see a newly converted Christian with a relish for the word, like a new baby for its mother's milk, feeding upon that precious thing whereby that new Christian grows and develops and comes to maturity? Isn't it a wonderful thing when, spiritually speaking, our lives are characterized by blessings of the breasts and of the womb? Oh, that it might be so, and certainly of us as a church here. Wouldn't it be wonderful, dear friends, if from the womb of our prayer meetings, from the womb of our church services, from the womb of our meetings, souls were born of God unto God, and there were the blessings of feeding on the word, the sincere milk of the word, new Christians. It would be wonderful to see new faces among us here from the world, newly converted people who before wouldn't dream of going to a prayer meeting and Bible study and laugh at the very thought of it, but now sat there reverently and happily feeding on the word and praying, perhaps eventually a new voice heard in the prayer meeting, thanking the Lord for saving his or her soul, glad to be among the Lord's people who've become his or her people. May it be so then, dear friends. These are all blessings, aren't they? From above, from beneath, and blessings beyond, blessings for the future. May God fulfill his word then, and he who delights in mercy, may he give us these blessings. Let's sing together now, hymn 42.